Well, good afternoon. I popped in here for the first time for a service Sunday morning and was reminded again that this has to be God's nearest way station before heaven. Oh, just an oasis. I'm just so glad to be back. Psalm 40 and 5 says, "Many, O Lord, my God, are the wonders you have done, the things you planned for us, no one can recount to you. Were I to speak of them, they would be too many to declare." It's a tremendous frustration I feel. Every time I get up to speak, it's like charades, you know. How can I get it all in a short time? And you can imagine the problem today when I haven't been here for 3 years. I know some of you have wondered where I was and prayed for me, and I'm so thankful. And somehow in the next half hour, I'm going to try to bring you up to date. And I want to assure you that I have reverently and earnestly prayed, "Lord, fill me with worthwhile stuff and nudge me when I've said enough." If you think I'm missing his cue, do something drastic, because I don't want to ramble on today. I know you've heard me say this before. Corrie Ten Boom said, "Faith is a fantastic adventure in trusting him." And I really want to emphasize that today, because in the 3 years since I've been here, I think that's the most important thing the Lord's taught me. He's big enough. He really is sufficient. We really can trust him. And I'm so grateful for that. I enjoyed talking to the girls at Fair Glen the other day and recounting some of the trials, crises of my childhood. And I mean, you forget that when we're that small, little things to little lives are major. Like being chubby, like being a bedwetter till a ripe old age. Like, you know, your mother dressing you funny, and my mother did dress me funny. It wasn't that we didn't have money, but for some reason, mother, who is Scottish, thought I should look like a British schoolgirl. And I mean, it was all very smart and nice, but not when everybody else had normal clothes and colors, and here I was in my blue tunic and white blouse every day and Oxfords. I mean, I didn't see anybody else wearing Oxfords. And all the other girls seemed to have pigtails and ponytails, and I had what looked like this year's bowl cut, you know, around my head. So many things. I wasn't really part of the in crowd. And I look back now, and I realize that God was preparing me through all of those things and many more to be different, to be his peculiar, special person, not peculiar, strange. And really, it wasn't until I was 24 that I was able to thank him for those things. That's when I came to know him personally. I'd always believed in God, and I knew that Jesus died for my sins, but I didn't know that I could know him. And I'll share a little more about that in a moment. I think of that song, "A Boy Named Sue." Johnny Cash sings it. You know, it was a lot of years before that son could thank his father for naming him Sue, because it made him strong in character. And I'm sure there are many things in all of our lives at the time we're not thankful, but we look back and we see that Father knew best. And that's really what I want to share about today. You know that I had a TV show, and I had just done a live TV show and gone for lunch at someone's house immediately following. To little children, I was never Moira. I was Moira Hunt. It was like one word, Moira Hunt. And I went to this girl's house, and the little boy went to his mother just in shock. "Mommy, how did Moira Hunt get out of the television box?" And a lot of people are asking that. But I think more important is how I got into it. Because again, this was God's leading me into an adventure before I was really cooperating with him. I wanted to be a social worker. I was the oldest of six children, and perhaps that had something to do with it. But in grade 12, I got into a contest, much against my own choosing, and won it and went to the local radio station to do an interview. They said, "We like your voice. Will you do some more things for us?" And that launched me into a career I never would have thought of for myself. And yet, it was God's way of fulfilling my heart's desire. Through many things, you know, pushing and pulling me through radio and then on into TV, always saying, "You've got the wrong girl." I couldn't have had a path that led me more in the way of people. Doing my own show, I had the privilege of inviting people of my own choice and getting to know them. Unlike Toronto, where it's really an interview factory, I've tried it, don't like it. I had an opportunity to spend quite a bit of time with people. So even then, God was working to fulfill my heart's desire. Well, it was doing one of these shows that I met Nell Maxwell. And Nell was God's instrument, Nell from Women Alive, to bringing me to himself. I was worried about the world ending, and at lunch she gave me a book called The Late Great Planet Earth. God's sense of humor is marvelous. And reading that book, I saw that God had a plan for the world, that he really did have everything in control, and that he had a plan for me too. For 3 years, as a Christian, I did the television program. There were a lot of changes. There were changes in the letters that I received. People weren't now just asking for a recipe. They were telling me about their lives. And you can imagine the kind of problems that are represented in our world. Young moms at home. Husbands had left them. Shut-ins. Alone. Seeing nobody for weeks at a time. And I was more and more concerned. I remember distinctly doing a live show, Cooking Fish. I know I've shared this before. But it was pivotal. It was an important point. On a live show, it's not really wise to let your thoughts wander. It's like me trying to give this message and daydream out the window at the same time. I was thinking, we're doing this program, and I know people are watching. They're interested in cooking, and hopefully this will brighten their half hour. You know, as Crystal said, it's important to be bright and positive because others pick that up, and it does help. But I knew the problems that were out there, and I knew that a new recipe wasn't the answer. It might brighten their mealtime, but I knew the one who would change their whole life, no matter what the situation. And I was talking about fish, and I was so frustrated. And that frustration was growing. And I was starting to say, Lord, this is wonderful to be here. We have excellent opportunities, but they need to know about Jesus. And I love the illustration in Oswald Chambers, My Utmost for His Highest. He talks about the bow and arrow. And he talks about pulling the bow back. And we feel God pulling. We feel the circumstances of our life pulling and pulling. And we think we're just going to go crazy. And we're screaming to God, what are you doing? And at just the right moment, he lets fly. And the arrow hits the bullseye. And I love the point he made that if God had let go of that arrow one moment sooner, it wouldn't have been a bullseye. It wouldn't have hit the mark. And God had to allow me to be stretched for at least a year so that when this same Mary that Gail spoke about, what a missionary for Cape and Ray, when this same Mary listened to me spew out all this frustration and then said, Moira, why don't you go to Cape and Ray? It was the arrow hitting the bullseye. A ridiculous suggestion on a human level, and yet it was right. Didn't have to think twice. So, the adventure really began. As Gail said, you know, Moira, they think because you work in TV, you were making mega bucks. And, you know, it wasn't that I wasn't making a good salary, but certainly not what you probably think I was making, and I did not have the money to even fly to England, never mind pay for the school. And many of you have heard the story in great detail of how the Lord, one day at a time, after I took the step of faith and quit my job, supplied everything I needed. And he made me, it was the old bow and arrow again, he made me go one day at a time. I could never even tell at the beginning of a week how the things that needed to be done in that week would be done. It was wonderful. And I was made to trust him right to the very last day, the day before I was to go to England. This same Mary Bond, bless her heart, from Oshawa, came to help me pack. I'm the world's most disorganized person. That's the joke about taking this job as an office manager. You know, it's a job where I have to trust God. I know he's got the giant chisel up there because I can't do this in my natural ability. Here I had a room with enough clothes and stuff to supply three people for 9 months in England. And Mary came to help me. You can't take that. You don't need that. Oh, but that, you know, I try and grab everything back. She was a marvelous help. But the crisis we didn't plan on was my mother's reaction to all of this. She was very upset that I was leaving and threatening all kinds of things. And I was beginning to say, oh, I was exhausted. I mean, all the send-offs and the packing and 7 years in an apartment and an office. And I just said, maybe I've made a mistake. Maybe I'm not supposed to go. And Mary came and she brought a pen with her. She had no idea what the circumstances would be on that day. And weeks before, she'd had a pen engraved for me. And it said, Moira, Revelation 3:8. I know your deeds. See, I have placed before you an open door that no one can shut. I know that you have little strength, yet you have kept my word and you have not denied my name. Oh, that was wonderful. Just that God knew how exhausted I was. He was there with me and we were going. Well, we did. And you know, when Ken Needham invites you to his home in Silverdale, he means it. I met Ken Needham here just before I was about to go, 2 years ago. His wife, Eva, met me at the airport, drove me 2 hours back to their home in Silverdale. I had a glorious few days there. And the first thing I did was to go for a walk. I'd been trotting all over the place telling people that Jesus loved them. And I walked down to the water, and for the first time in a long time, I just basked in the pleasure of his company. And the tears were just rolling down my face. For the first time in a long time, I just simply enjoyed his love for me. And the fact that he'd done all this for me. And I emphasize that because for 24 years, I had no concept of a personal God who really cared about every detail of my life. Well, I stepped into a fairy tale, and Cape and Ray, we're really not here to wave a flag for Cape and Ray, but it's kind of hard not to. It's like stepping into a fairy tale. If you open one of those kids' storybooks and you see the green hills and the trees, it's just what it's like. Bridges and streams, you know. 23rd Psalm becomes very real. I didn't trust I could stay. It was too good to be true. I thought, something's going to happen at home. I'll get the weekend, and it'll be back home. Well, I didn't trust that God knew what he was doing either. I thought, I've been an independent girl. I've been on my own for 7 years. God is going to put me in a room full of 8 screaming teenagers with a chisel. You know, time to get those rough edges knocked off. The Lord was much wiser than that. I could have been very self-righteous if I'd been in with a bunch of screaming meanies. He put me in with 2 angels. A girl from Switzerland and a girl from Manchester, who drove me into a prison of self. They were servants. They had so many little unconscious acts of love and caring, I was going crazy. And I tried to tell them. I said, they laughed. They didn't even know what I was talking about. But I said, I feel like a squirrel in a cage and I can't get out. And I was clawing like this, trying to show them how I felt. And the Lord was really working to show me that here I was now in England, there was no bag of tricks. I couldn't pull something out of a bag. It was time to learn how to really give of myself. And in little simple things, offering me a coffee, putting a hot water bottle in my bed, invaluable item at Cape and Ray, England. They were showing me that I wasn't so loving as I thought I was. My love was pretty shallow after all. Attitude and trust. One of the things that hit me right off the bat was the announcement that I was going to be doing a TV show. And I wasn't very pleased about that. I thought, now I get to come to England and be Moira Nobody, just Moira Canadian. And they'd arranged a TV interview. I thought, what right do they have to do that? I didn't say that to the principal, mind you, but that's what I was thinking. You know, the Lord was answering a prayer I'd prayed before I ever went to England. I had 3 years earlier, visited relatives on the east coast of England, loved them dearly, knew they didn't know the Lord, and I thought, I bet I'll get to see them while I'm over there. Well, sure enough, I spent Christmas and Easter with them. What I didn't know was that the TV interview, a religious broadcast, Three's Company, the host, me and the Lord, was going to be aired, recorded and aired on the east coast. Now, I'd been at their home at Christmas. My uncle was a typical stiff upper lip British person. Didn't talk about his feelings because that would leave him open and vulnerable. I remember he was watching Dallas, and I don't know if you see Dallas, but Cliff came in. Sue Ellen had jilted him. He'd lost his empire. He was weeping. He was a broken man. I wish you could have seen my uncle. He sat up, quite heavy. He sat up on the edge of his chair and he said, What manner of man is this crying? He's just aghast. Well, that was my uncle. But beneath the jovial surface man, there was a man who desperately needed the Lord. And the wonderful thing is that this program, which gave me 12 minutes to give my clear testimony, was being aired right in their neck of the woods, Tynemouth, Newcastle. At Easter, I discovered at the last minute I could get a rail pass, even though I was too old. I'd been in school long enough that I could get a free trip from South Wales to Inverness. Went on to Kirkcaldy. I had received a message in Inverness that I couldn't stay with the aunt I was going to stay with. She was going to Inverness. But she said, it's okay, you can stay with some other people you know. When I got there, I called them. They said, I'm sorry, we're going to Spain. But don't worry, you can stay with my brother and his family. I called them. They were very apologetic. They'd had illness. There I was, stranded in Scotland. By now, I had learned to say, well, Lord, it's your plan. It's not mine. Where are we off to now? And I thought for a minute, I'll call Tom and Gloria in England, my relatives, and ask if I can come a week early. It was April 3rd. I got there, went for a walk, popped in on the dear little ladies next door, sat down, had a cup of tea. They said, Moira, isn't this the day that your interview is on TV? I said, you're kidding. Pulled out the TV guide, the newspaper, and there it was. Three's Company with Moira Hunt. I couldn't believe it. Some of you received a letter from me asking if you would pray that this family would watch this program. All the odds were against us. In Britain, they pull the plug right out of the wall at 10 o'clock. People don't watch TV at midnight in Britain. Not only was the program not aired at 12:15, it was late. It ran at 12:30. With me there, of course they watched. It would be more than an insult not to, so we all sat up and watched. Now, unfortunately, one of the two teenage sons was not there. So we watched the interview. We watched all of the interview. A half hour later, Ian, the one who'd been away, came back. His mom said, oh, Ian, you've just missed Moira on TV. He said, no, we didn't, Mom. I was down at George's. We all watched. Another couple that I had met in a previous visit to England, a friend of theirs and his wife, just happened to be up and just happened to have the dial on that channel at that time and saw it as well. When I left England, I wrote a letter to this family, to Ian, Tom and Gloria, that was the kind of letter I would write as if the plane was going to crash, my last letter to them. And afterward, I worried about it. I thought, oh, Moira, that was really too direct, too forward. Just 3 months ago, Easter, I called over there and talked to Tom. They never told us, but weeks later, he died of cancer. We didn't know anything about it, just talking about retirement and so on. So just that one illustration of trusting God and not my own rights and my own demands, and how God, some of you have prayed. I sent a letter and some of you prayed about that. And it was just wonderful to see God work in that situation. I don't know where Tom stood, but I'm very thankful because I believe God wouldn't have gone to all the trouble to arrange all of that for nothing. I've taken too long to tell one little wee story. Got to tell you about my donut, though, because this was one more important lesson in trusting in the same place, Tynemouth. New Year's Eve day, I went for a walk. I developed many more sweet teeth in England because you haven't eaten until you've had dessert over there, and I'm still working on the pounds I managed to pack on in my 9 months in England. But I went for a walk one day in Tynemouth Village, and I thought, you rationalize. I thought, well, it's 11 o'clock. I mean, it's still morning. But I'll just walk 2 blocks into this village, and if I haven't found a bake shop, I won't bother. Well, in England, you don't even have to walk 1 block to find a bake shop, let's face it. Walked in, and they just seemed to happen to have there my favorite British treat. It's a hot dog-shaped donut with real whipped cream in it and kind of sugar around the outside. And I just seemed to have the right amount of change to buy one and a drink to go with it, an orange drink in a carton. Now, in England, you don't ever walk on the street eating. It's really not done. So I headed out with my... I couldn't go home with this at 11 in the morning. I mean, that would be too embarrassing. So here I am trying to gingerly eat this donut, which just wasn't quite right. It was mushy. It wasn't the way it was supposed to be. And the drink was very chemically. So here I've got this stuff going in, feeling very knotted up because I'm making a spectacle of myself. I got home. My aunt and her friend had been shopping, and they said, Moira, we waited for you, but we thought we'd better go ahead, but we've made you our traditional New Year's Eve day lunch. Ham and peas pudding sandwich. Peas pudding is like cold, thick pea soup. Sounds dreadful, tastes delicious. On homemade bread with hot mustard, and I really felt rotten. I'd missed the fellowship and their special lunch, but I had my sandwich on top of this lead weight that was already down there. And my aunt said, my aunt's a wonderful baker. She'd never go to a bake shop. She said, Moira, just because we were out shopping, we passed the bake shop, we brought a special treat. She brought out a hot dog-shaped donut filled with real whipped cream and sugar all around the outside. And I tried so hard to be delighted. And inside, I wanted to crawl under the table. I was so mortified because I knew I was getting a message. Oh, Moira, no good thing will I withhold from those who walk uprightly. No good thing, you know? Delight yourself in the Lord, and He'll give you the desires of your heart. He makes everything beautiful in His time. I couldn't eat the donut. But God, who is incredibly gracious, allowed that donut in the evening to be just as delicious as it would have been at lunchtime. But I got the message, trusting Him and not trying to work it out on my own. Well, there were many, many things I had to trust the Lord for. I had a Laker return ticket. You know what happened to Laker the year I was there? No ticket home. I had more luggage than I could possibly bring home. The only thing I regret is that I didn't trust the Lord enough to bring all the luggage to the airport because He got it through. I had a church praying and a church witness a miracle. Oh, we get away with some things, but this was incredible. Humongous, two super huge suitcases, three carry-ons, two extra carry-on pieces. So, I mean, I could be on all day about that. I heard a lot in spring school about living on past blessings, and I said, Lord, don't let me do it. I want to live the adventure. And the Lord was listening, because I came home, and He didn't give me the nice, neat niche. For the past 2 years, I've sold advertising in Oakville for a college yearbook. I've worked in radio and television. I've done an awful lot of free falls. But the chute has always opened. I've lived in four places. I don't have time to tell you all the things I'd like to. There was one very special thing. I had heard that my job was open at CKVR and that they were interested in me coming back. And I came back and I contacted them. They said, we want you to come and do what you were doing before. We'll even let you have Christian guests on the show. Wow. I didn't like the idea of going back. I'd actually had a lot of fear in coming home, to be very honest. I was afraid of what people would expect. When they approached me about coming here to speak 2 years ago, I dodged the opportunity, and I'm sorry. But I really had to deal with fear. Fear of coming back and being the Moira Hunt Show. And it's taken the Lord a lot of time to help me to realize who I am in Him, and to trust that He really is also sufficient to help me to be that. Funny. I asked for the adventure, and first leg of the journey I was balking. But I came back, and you know, the principal at Cape May kept saying, don't be surprised if your ministry begins in the place where they know the worst about you. right back home to my old bedroom. The day CKVR said no, CFMP and a Christian boss said yes in Peterborough. They had a young fellow going out to Bible school out west, and I came in. And it was the Lord's timing in so many things. Fun being at home. I'd get notes on the fridge from my two brothers who lived at home, 19 and 24. Moira, it is God's will that you feed the dog and cat. Or, Moira, if you wake me up before 9 o'clock, you will be arriving in heaven prematurely. Same brother called my car the Mission Mobile. If anybody called me and he thought it was a Christian, he'd come to me and say, it's someone from the mission. Just he's had a good time with me. He stopped one day, I was writing letters in the dining room, and he stood back and he said, the thing that scares me is, I think you're going to be like this for the rest of your life. That's Gord, and I believe he's going to be the next Christian in the family. Don't you, Liz? Yeah. Mr. Van Duren at school sends out, Cape and Ray, sends out books to different missions and people on the field in different places. And I kept saying, God, why have you asked me to be in a basement office, the dungeon of the castle, no windows, cold, damp, no natural light, little shoebox of a room, all by myself, for one whole day a week, packing up books? This is not my gift. When I got to CFMP and was shown the brand new shoebox studio in the basement with no windows, I knew what God had been preparing me for. You know, I tried to take a tape deck into that office in the basement, and it wouldn't work. That was the Lord. It worked upstairs all right. But the Lord was really teaching me to find all my fountains in Him, in His presence. And it's been a joy to be at CFMP. How am I going to tell you the whole rest in 5 minutes? I want to say this, that in the eyes of the world, to some people, I've thrown away a career. And I've been reminded that God rewards faithfulness. The world rewards success. God rewards faithfulness. And in the jobs I've taken on, jobs I would never do if it weren't for the Lord, I've found joy, and I've actually been able to do them to my great surprise. Writing commercials. Just because I've been on TV doesn't mean you can write a commercial. Deuteronomy 28:12 says, the Lord will open the heavens, the storehouse of His bounty, to send rain on your land in season, and to bless all the work of your hands. Deuteronomy 15:10, the Lord your God will bless you in all your work, everything you put your hand to. And I know that blessing was only because I was where He wanted me to be. And sometimes my trust wavered. You know, I'd been living with an 86-year-old woman for 3 months. The day after she went to live with her daughter, the station called with full-time work. You know, the Lord's timing is always just right on. A fellow had stormed out, nervous breakdown. I thought I'd be there for 3 weeks. I was there for 4 months writing commercials for radio, AM and FM. And me, sitting at a typewriter, you know, it's all shaping up now. 4 months sitting at a typewriter, filing papers. I mean, this was not me. I am not a secretary. But I enjoyed it. And as I look back, I didn't realize at the time, but the very thing that had bothered me a year earlier, reading Christmas messages on FM that were all about family and fireside, and, you know, Christmas isn't family and fireside for everybody, is it? And yet we can have real joy in the truth of Christmas, no matter who we are, where we are, or what our circumstances. And I hated those messages. They were making me sick. This year, I got to write them all for AM and FM. I didn't realize I'd written them all till after the fact. And I didn't realize they weren't just going to be used with the Christmas music, but after the AM announcer played Def Leppard and all about dark and evil and awful, he was reading about light and hope and the Christ child. And I just praise God that even though I didn't know what was going on, it was again being His person in His place at His time. Well, What more can I tell you in a few final words about trusting? I really wanted to tell you about a very difficult experience that God used. Haggai 1 and 4, last August. Pardon me, it was June when I first read it. I was sitting in my mother's wood-paneled den, still living at home at the time. Is it a time for you yourselves to remain in your wood-paneled houses? Doesn't say wood. Is it a time for you yourselves to remain in your paneled houses while my house remains a ruin? I thought, Lord, where do you want me to go? What do you want me to do? What am I not doing? It was a lightning bolt, and I was open. And I was in a car accident just a month following that was just purely a miracle that we came out of it. Mary and I came home with two license plates from Michigan. And at the time, we'd been singing a little song, Thou art my hiding place, Thou wilt preserve me in trouble. And it was really just the beginning of trouble. I came home, and a brother who's always been really supportive, he'd had a few drinks, and he attacked me. If I had come in here today and Sue had just savagely lambasted me, I couldn't have been more surprised and shattered. Have you ever been that crushed that you can't breathe? Just getting air into your lungs is a major effort. I was like that for days. Just crushed. I thought, God, you made a mistake. You know, Michigan should have been it. I don't know why I'm here because this is all wrong. I went to pick up my newly painted car, and the man who had painted it wanted me to meet his wife. I didn't want to meet anybody. I didn't have anything to give anybody. I went to see her, and we talked for half an hour about different things, and I don't know what twigged it, but Niagara Falls began. I let it all out, and she prayed with me, and she said she saw a picture of a flower being buffeted by wind and storm and hail, but she said in the storm, the stem of that flower was growing stronger. And that's all I needed to know. Let the storms come. I can take it as long as I'm in your place. And God used that to get me moving. Just a few weeks later, I was reading Proverbs, sitting outside. I don't always sit outside to have a devotional time, but I was. Proverbs 24:11. Rescue those who are perishing. Hold back those staggering towards slaughter. And an ambulance pulled up across the street. And my 86-year-old neighbor, who's always lived there, staggered out, literally, on the arm of two ambulance attendants. And I knew I had to investigate. Well, I ended up living with her. She'd had a stroke. It was a marvelous time, living with her for 3 months. But, you know, it was another one of those bow and arrow situations where I had to be stretched to the point of pain to get moving. Another thing the Lord brought out of that was a Bible study at a senior citizen's home where a fellow expressed an interest and, you know, I in my foolish pride thought, oh, well, he just wants an excuse to have a Bible study and he's saying a few other people are interested. There are 25 people there every week and they're the most receptive, eager, appreciative group of people I've ever worked with. 2 weeks after I'd been there, a lady came up and took my hand and said, we've been praying for this. And I wondered how long the Lord had been waiting for me to really trust him and step out. Well, this is really bad. This is really bad. I'm just going to have to sum up and say many things happened in that time. I thought the Lord was telling me to buy a house. He got me out of bed at 1 in the morning. I read 1 Chronicles 17, and it said, I will settle you and plant you and give you a home of your own where you won't be disturbed. And I thought the Lord wanted me to buy Mrs. Callender's house. I don't know with what. I didn't have a job, and I didn't even have a down payment for a house, but I was willing to try. So I called an uncle who I thought, try the human effort, and he gave me a half-hour financial post report on my life, which was really a drag. And so I thought, the house sold right out from under me, and I was so tempted to say, Lord, what a rotten trick. You promised me. I mean, I know you showed me that passage to say you were going to give me a house. Abraham waited 25 years, didn't he, for Isaac? I waited 2 weeks. What a suck. You know what the Lord had for me? My furniture had all been stored and had gone to make a home for somebody else. And I just praise God for it. It looks better where it is now than it ever did in my apartment. And the Lord gave me a fully furnished house on the river, 3 minutes from Chex, CFMP, across the park from my piano teacher. He also gave me a whole lesson in James 1 and 2. Consider it pure joy when you suffer trials of many kinds, for the testing of your faith develops perseverance. It was a whole new lesson in trusting. Everything went wrong. You know, the basement flooded twice for the first time ever. I had water coming right in the living room. The hot water tap delivered hot, red, rusty water. That one night I couldn't even get in the front door. My neighbor had to break in. Everything. I could be here all day telling you about the house, but it was an important lesson. And every crisis in that house brought a blessing. I'm just going to tell you fast about the furnace man. Can I tell you about the furnace man? Can I? I was working at the time writing commercials, and I was only being paid for the hours I was there. In the dead of winter, January, the basement was flooding. The furnace was off. Okay, the heat was off. The lights were off. Everything was off. The house was freezing. I was standing on a wet rug trying to get someone to come and clean the furnace. We'd already sump pumped everything again. Come and clean the furnace to get it going again. Well, the fellow was a real grump. He didn't want to come. I said, could you not please come now, because I have to go to work, but I have to be here also to let you in. Okay, he was coming. I thought, oh boy, he's sweet. So we waited. He came, and a fellow from England, where's the furnace? So I showed him the furnace. And meanwhile, I was getting a little peeved, you know. I mean, this was money I was not making, and I had better things to do than sit around a cold, damp living room. It had been terribly frustrating. And while he was down there, something just twigged, and I thought, Moira, you're God's representative right now with this grumpy furnace man. Okay, I'll offer him a coffee. So I offered him a coffee. He had a coffee. A little while later, he asked for a second coffee. I'm thinking, come on, I mean, this isn't social hour, I've got to get to work. He came upstairs, and I don't know, I overcame myself and my rights enough to make some conversation, say I'd been in England. You wouldn't believe the conversation that opened up, the death of his father, the concern about some things at home. He really had it all. He'd a young man, he'd come from England, his family was growing, his business was successful. And he was desperate. Now what? And it was a marvelous opportunity to share the Lord with him and to give him a couple of books. And he said, you know, this Sunday I'm going to be in church. My son is a cub, and it's Cub Sunday. And I thought, wow. And he told me, he said, you know, his face was totally transformed by now. He wasn't grumpy at all. He said, I wasn't supposed to be here. I mean, normally I wouldn't be the one coming here today. My partner would have been coming here. That's probably why he was in such a grump. But we both realized it was a divine appointment. And I just thought, oh, Lord, how many opportunities like this have I blown because I haven't had your perspective? Anyway, Theodore Williams' faith is a fantastic adventure in trusting him. Theodore Williams said, we face a humanity that is too precious to neglect. We know the remedy for the ills of the world, too wonderful to withhold. We have a Christ who is too glorious to hide. We have an adventure that is too thrilling to miss. My birthday verse at Cape and Ray from the Amplified Version, Habakkuk 3:19. The Sovereign Lord is my strength, my personal bravery, and my invincible army. He makes my feet like the feet of a deer. A week later, I saw two beautiful hinds in Scotland, and it just confirmed this so much. He enables me to walk, not to stand still in terror, but to walk and make spiritual progress upon my high places of trouble, suffering, or responsibility. Ken Needham has been sounding the battle cry this week, and I want to leave you with a battle cry. Two Eritrean girls at school taught us this word, and bless their hearts, if the Lord hadn't got them out of that country, those beautiful girls would have had rifles on their shoulder and been in that same army. This was used to encourage the soldiers heading out. Ajoha, masculine. Ajohi, feminine. You would say this to someone if two people were climbing a mountain and one got tired and said, leave me here. You're going to have to go on without me. I can't go any further. Ajohi. Continue forward. This is not the end place. Have hope. Victory is yours.
Joe Heap.